If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Mike Ray, former cop and body double for a world-famous action star, was ready to put show business behind him when he was asked to do one last favor for Hollywood's hottest new actress. All he had to do was find her the necklace from a forgotten film and not get killed in the process. From the insane house parties of Malibu and the reclusive mansions of Beverly Hills to the scorching California desert, Mike finds himself in a scandal involving one of the world's most eccentric billionaires, the Nevada Mafia, and a sadistic Estonian porn kingpin. To find the necklace, he'll have to blow the lid off a secret buried in the California desert that stretches back to ancient Egypt, with an irresistible client who won't take no for an answer. The job doesn't get him killed, she just might. Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main has been described as a fast-paced love child of The Big Lebowski and Indiana Jones. Find out why readers have made this book one of the best reviewed in all of Amazon. It's Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main, available for only $2.99 on the Amazon Kindle store. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Boys and girls, children and goblins, werewolves, witches, people of all ages, welcome to another episode of Weird Things, the podcast. I'm joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
Doing his best second-rate Jerry Lewis impersonation.
Hi.
And Mr. Brian Mad Dog Brushwood.
See, I can relate because it's like when you turn the attention on us, it's like the spotlight of truth has just been thrust in our faces, and we have naught to do but to apologize for our wrongdoings.
Like just, I've thrown my Wonder Woman lasso around you guys, tied you up in an uncomfortable position.
This is uncomfortably close to a fantasy I wrote down on a blog post a long time ago.
Hey, I say you publish that sucker because I think I smell another gold mine.
Yeah, I guess you're referring to the Diamond Club. Can we out your brilliant idea to follow up the Diamond Club? We were going to talk about it on NSFW, but it seems like more of a Weird Things idea.
Sure. You talked to me about it. Free to the world.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So obviously, if you're following along with Justin and I shenanigans on NSFW, we released an erotic fiction book called The Diamond Club, and we were like, "Well, that was fun. Good going, team. We certainly did."
And just for people who have no idea what it is, it was all crowdsourced. We didn't. I wrote a chapter, and everything else from this 250-page book was completely written by all different authors. There's no coherency. It's all over the top and ridiculous. And it also was a legitimate minor ebook publishing hit.
Major. Do not sell it short. It is a huge ebook success, and it's still doing very well. You guys did meteor off really big. I'm trying to find a metaphor here. Stratostrophic, meteorological.
I guess meteor.
It went around the world. Still, good news, you guys did an amazing, amazing job. And as
we did
as
many sales as Meteor Man, the Eddie Murphy.
It is still better written than most erotic fiction out there.
But so. The important thing is that Andrew had the brilliant idea. We're trying to figure out what to do for the follow-up. And I was thinking something goofy like, what if we released the copyright so we gave it the rights to whoever wanted to print it could print it up. But Andrew took it to the whole next level, which was Andrew's thinking was, you know, all these other books, they wait until they're 100 years old and the copyright is expired, and then they rewrite them with zombies or sea monsters or vampire hunters or whatever. His idea was 2 months after the release of Diamond Club, Really?
It's obviously established as a literary classic.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly. Jane Austen.
Would have happened in 75 years anyway.
Exactly, right? Re-release it, completely rewritten, but with zombies. That way we cash in on not one, but two literary fads of the
early 21st
century. I don't
even say rewritten. I literally think you go through there and say, where can you put in the word zombies? And just add sentences relating to zombies in there. Because I think everybody who read it the first time and made it through is going to know, how did they work zombies into this? And given how revoltingly erotic it is already, I think you will push the limits of taste.
It's so brilliant.
Way beyond.
I just want to see, I can't wait to see a cupcake artist dubstep extraordinaire zombie vampire killer show up in the book at some point.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's it really what Andrew's thing is. There's a professional rodeo writer who is in the book, who interacts with the main character, Brianna Young. So you'd be a rodeo writer who, like, and just like on the way casually had to kill a zombie, like, you know, to get there, like, and just have it be one line, have it not affect the plot at all.
Right.
Like, just literally like, oh, sorry, I was late. I had to kill a zombie.
I made it all the way through the green zone. Traffic has backed up all the way through the safe area.
And it could be like in the middle of sex, and do we use preparation? Because I don't want to get zombie disease. Yes.
They're like, well, it's not. What, you think I have zombie disease? They're like, no, not you. But I've just heard that everyone you've slept with forever might have the zombie disease.
Yes.
I'll tell you what. I say, just in the same way that we have all different lovers that she sleeps with, every chapter has her sleeping with a different person with a different job. I say every chapter is a different monster. It's like mummies, zombies, vampires, chupacabras. Like,
yes!
Everybody, nobody can have the same monster.
Yes, that's brilliant. I love it.
So there we go. Coming soon to iTunes, The Diamond Club and the Zombies, Werewolves, Chupacabras, Van Helsing, and more.
Gentlemen, I like to start things off with a mystery. I like to tax your brains. Of course, it's hard to tax something when there's
there's no water left.
It's a catastrophic. It's like, you know, Scandinavian tax rates.
It's
blood
like
from a stone, bro.
Blood, oh, you beat me to it. I was going to say blood from a vampire stone, where it's like the stone's more likely to take blood from you.
So I'm gonna say we got a guy. His initials are MM, and was caught in an airport smuggling
grapes.
Smuggling raisins. It was cold.
Just
smuggling?
We're smuggling.
Was he straight cold busted?
Every day I'm smuggling.
They caught him. Something was suspicious about this guy. They're like, all right, this guy, something's not right here.
Something's up. So what's
exotic animal? I'm thinking exotic animal, like a wallaby.
Hold on. Let's back up. Tell me a little bit about Mr. MM. Is it, first of all, can you confirm it's the mentalist Max Maven? Was it?
Yes,
was that
it
the
is
MM?
Not.
It is not. Okay, all right.
He would, like, do, like, scanners on us and blow up our brains.
I know. Can I just pretend it's Max Maven for this scenario?
He will do scanners on us and blow up our brains.
All right, it's not Max Maven. Yes. So MM, Major Muffins, needed in like...
No, you read the story.
No. Wait, really? Is that his name?
Yes, Brian. That's his name. Yes. Major Muffins. Of the
Major
Boston
Muffin, made a Metropolitan.
Major Muffin Top wanted to sneak. How tall is he? A tall man? Short man?
I don't know.
It's Magic Mike.
It doesn't get into his Match.com profile here, Brian.
All right. So Major Muffin Top is trying to get something through. Now, through the TSA, though, right? Because that's different. That's got to be on your person. Okay.
All right.
Does he have a snake?
I think snakes. It's been a while since the answer has been snakes on this podcast.
All right, for the record, I said snakes before Justin did. Just FYI. Just as far as we both had our eyes on the same prize, but I said it first.
All right, then I don't think it's snakes anymore. Now I think it's zombies or werewolves or Van Helsing.
Or mummies.
Well, gentlemen, there is a multi-agency crackdown. I'm not going to tell if you're right or wrong yet. I will tell you what the code name, so the crims would not know what was going on.
Wait, did you say the crims, like, as in short for criminals?
Yeah, man.
All right. Sorry.
Okay.
No,
I've been watching Breaking Bad. I know what I'm talking about.
I missed that memo.
You ready? Operation Snake Pit.
I got it. Slash from Guns N' Roses. He was trying to smuggle in Slash from Guns N' Roses.
L.A. Guns turned on Guns N' Roses.
It's
turned on Slash.
Maybe mummified snakes? Like, you think they're just like toothpicks, but they're like tiny snakes that have been mummified?
So it was... snakes. The first time I saw this, I got excited because I actually thought he was trying to like bodily, smuggle them, which I thought would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He hid them in nylon stockings and then put them inside old stereo speakers in his luggage. And apparently when the suitcases went through the x-ray, they could see the reptiles.
Now, what is he thinking? That nobody will recognize the bone structure of a snake embedded in a...
Guess how many?
I mean, I'm thinking, what kind of snakes are these?
A ball python, seven boas.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. Snakes. Wait a minute. Were some of them trouser snakes?
Okay. All right. You know what? That would be the smart way to smuggle it, because then you get them trapped up in like a biological discussion where it's like you're walking through and the discussion they're having is not, are you smuggling anything? But like people arguing about like, nuh-uh, there ain't no bones in that. And they're like, yeah, well, it can't be that long. And then it's just like, then you have them arguing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Like maybe your junk is like Cthulhu style.
Yeah, maybe you got tendril snakes.
What if you put like four on either end? They thought you're like Doc Ock.
There you go. I mean, they're like prehensile. They're like, I'm sorry, sir. Do you have prehensile genitalia? And you're like, what's it to you?
Exactly.
So, 27.
Nuh-uh.
27 snakes.
Nuh-uh.
Now, we've talked a bit before about, things you should be afraid of and not afraid of when you fly.
Yeah, 27 snakes is one of them. That's on the list. Wasn't that
okay? How do we know that this guy just wasn't going to Dragon Con with his snakes on a plane cosplay?
Exactly.
Okay.
You know what? Actually, that's pretty good. How can I?
That's it. I'm submitting myself as that guy's lawyer.
Well, here's the thing that I can't figure out. So he was headed home to Brazil. He bought them at the National Reptile.
Wait. Who smuggles snakes into Brazil?
This is backwards.
Cuckoo banana pants. Are you kidding me?
Listen, he already had a successful business of bringing sand to the beach, and he figured he wanted to expand.
So, I don't know. I was hoping to get more out of that, but obviously
no. Well, apparently you're like smuggling. Both of us go snakes.
Snakes. I guess this is like you're like your pitch meeting in like 1980s with NBC. All right, South Florida, we get some really cool Phil Collins music. Guy lives on a boat. All right, we like it. We got a lot of South Americans. It's got this real hip vibe. You're like, all right. So what is it? The exotic pet trade.
Yeah. So okay. So I mean, obviously, look, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Assuming it's a 12-hour clock.
Snakes is like, people who watch House always joke about, how everything is lupus.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's, their go-to, they need a disease that has all sorts of crazy weird symptoms, and they can always write it off as lupus. Like, our lupus is snakes. Snakes is, a reoccurring, it can be something super weird, there's, a sound, a mysterious scratch on a child's face. Snakes.
Hitler had an elite army.
By TSA. Snakes.
Right. Hitler had an elite army of mysterious soldiers. Snakes.
Snakes.
There's five in my pants right now. Snakes.
Snakes.
Former playmate like got caught smuggling 80s. A man into the United States.
Wait, I'm sorry, it sounded like you said former playmate. Got caught smuggling a man. Where would she hide that?
Playboy playmate Colleen Channion got busted August 16 for allegedly smuggling a man into the U.S. from Canada. They don't exactly say how. Oh, wait, nope. She was arrested in her luggage.
She was arrested in her luggage. Wait, there was an actual man in her luggage?
The man was in her luggage, Brian.
God dang.
I'll tell you what, because that seems like one of those cutesy things that you say to somebody that oh, I wish I could come with you. Just put me in your luggage. And she's like, oh, ha ha ha. I was like, no, for real. I'm getting in your luggage.
So you think it's the guy pressuring in? He's just like, come on, let me in. Don't worry. Nobody will know. It'll be our secret.
I just trying to like imagine the awkward trip to the luggage store. Can I step inside of that? Do you mind? Do you mind?
Exactly.
Is it okay for air holes?
No? Let's just see. Just for grinsies. Larry, come on over. Just get inside. It's a game we play. We figure if Larry fits in there, my underwear drawer will, right? Larry, you're comfortable?
Maybe just because I've been traveling a lot, but like, how much does that bag cost, man? Because they really ding you over 50 pounds. Like, yeah, that's.
Welcome to my world.
You might as well fly in your goddamn self.
This is like my favorite new thing of 2012 is that Justin finally understands my obsession with the bizarre nature of air travel now. It's like, I'm so glad that you're in the club.
Yeah. No, it's I don't get this Canadian guy. So he lives in Canada. Obviously, he's into this playmate, right? Because she's probably a bombshell, smoking hot. And next thing you know, so you think, Brian, it might have been the girl. The girl's like, no, you should come with me. And he's like, I can't. I'm not a citizen. I won't be able to go. I don't have a passport. Right, she's get into my suitcase.
There's no way. It has to be him telling her to get inside.
Please.
And who thinks he's not going to get caught nowadays sneaking into luggage? It's like there's x-rays.
I don't know if it was an airport or driving across because, you know, sometimes details, who needs them for this show? I mean, let's be honest. It's not like we're up for like a Peabody.
Wait.
I don't know if we'd
qualify. All right. Hold on. Wait a minute. So he wasn't flying. They were driving.
Oh, is that what happened? They're driving. Well, but even then, they got, dude, I mean, maybe this is me living close to the Mexican border, but they got all these x-rays. They look for skeletons all inside. They x-ray or millimeter wave radar, whatever, you know, they look at everything that goes through, especially since 9/11.
I guess that's why they got caught.
Ta-da.
There's a reason we're talking about this story, Brian.
Whose idea is this, Andrew? Is it random Canadian guy or mega hot playmate?
I think probably it was a brain trust. I think the two of them probably got together and conceived of this plan. So she was the 2004 Playboy Playmate for the 50th anniversary issue. And it's funny because her modeling pose, you know, for her side shot, she does kind of do this sort of side pursed lip shot.
Wait, she does
a little duck face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this is either a dumb guy or a girl's plan.
Faces up to 10 years in prison. It's a price for love.
I mean, there's no doubt that he is. I mean, this is a family podcast, so I'm just going to say that they became really good friends, and he would have really missed her friendship.
It's a very politic way to put it.
I'm just saying.
Well, there was Jeff Bezos talked about. He knew he met the woman to be his wife when he realized she would be the woman that if he ever got kidnapped in the middle of some like Middle Eastern country, she would mount a rescue operation to save him. Well, so there's something to be said that you found the right woman when, you know, she physically attempts to,
maybe this is like a bizarre cosplay kind of thing. They're like, you know, what'd get me really hot is if we got busted by the feds and I was trying to smuggle you across the border, you could be like all wrapped up inside of a piece of luggage, and then they'd see your bones, and then maybe I'd peek over and I'd see the bones, and they'd be all like, are you trying to smuggle a guy into America? And I'd be like, no, I'm not. But then secretly I'd get all hot, and then we'd get arrested, and then we'd have crazy times together afterwards.
Yeah.
This is my new favorite voice of Brian, by the way.
that's why sexy. Really,
I mean, like, voice. It's normally not that hard for like a Canadian to like come here. You know?
No. You need, or at least you used to only have to have a driver's license.
Yeah, but now you need a passport and you need an excuse.
Yeah, like, hey, can I come say hi? Sure, eh? You know?
And then the cops will be all like, why is there a man in your luggage? And I'll say, I don't know.
I bought some maple syrup and they put a lumberjack in there.
LOL.
Could happen.
What is the penalty for this? Where do they have to go?
Her 10 years in jail. Canada.
No, wait. This just to get a guy from Canada into the U.S. You go to jail for 10 years.
Called human trafficking, Brian.
I don't know. Like, why? why doesn't he, like, was he a wanted felon?
I don't know why.
Thrill seekers? See, apparently, I prefer
there,
to think
there is a reason why
seekers.
They knew that he couldn't just, like, hey, what's going on, eh, across the border.
I would like to think that he's like a 4'8" professor at a well-respected university who just had a taste for adventure. Where he's like, I don't know, I just wanted to do something dangerous once. And she's like, I got the idea.
I'm betting Pryor's.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and bet on
Richard Pryor.
Know. Yes, yeah. Richard Pryor. Famed Canadian Prime Minister Richard Pryor.
Hey, man.
Do we have any sponsors?
Yeah,
we do.
Okay, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, we
Samsonite
always love
luggage.
We always love it when one of our listeners go ahead and buys out the podcast. It's a real baller move. It's a confident move. You walk in, you skip the
line.
It's
a sign we're not charging enough.
I want all of them. Well, we salute today on this podcast, George McLeod. George McLeod writes, do you love Andrew Main's books? Great. Keep reading them and supporting indie authors. Then when you're done with that, check out Fiction Improbable at fictionimprobable.com. They cover sci-fi, fantasy, steampunk kind of stories. So head on over there, fictionimprobable.com. And George McLeod, thank you for going on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor, which all you folks can do right now if you wanted to buy a spot, and buying out the entire podcast, all three spots. Thank you very much, George. We very much appreciate your support.
Is it George or Gord? G-O-R-D McLeod, because Gord McLeod of Fiction Improbable is one of our frequenters in the chat realm for all the other shows. Gord
McLeod. Blow it, Justin.
Well, I think that there's maybe a given name is given in the PayPal thing.
I gotcha. No,
in all seriousness, thank you very, very, very much for the shout out there. There is, as we all know, there's a lot of exciting things happening in the world of e-publishing, and myself, a little over a year into it, very excited by the reception I've got. You guys have seen what's happened with Justin and Brian and Diamond Club. And it's not a little niche vanity thing. It is a viable thing onto itself now. And you don't need the imprimatur of a New York publishing house to say, go check this person out. And you go to a place like fictionimprobable.com, whatever. You can find stuff. You can find a lot of great authors. And what's neat is devices like the Kindle and the iPad and the Kindle software for the Android allow you to discover a lot of new authors and allows you to, you know, from the internet, from all this, books are great. They'll be around forever, but we are in an exciting, exciting time now. We don't know where the next Robert Heinlein's going to come from, but he's probably publishing ebooks right now. You know, the next Isaac Asimov, you know, could be some 24-year-old student right now putting something out there, maybe on that website.
Well, and here's a good way to put it is if you are young talent, if you've got some juice, there's no reason for you to go through traditional publishing. What you should do, if you know, if you believe you have talent, if you believe you have stories that you think can, titillate and excite the public, then why would you go with traditional publishing? You would stand to make more money, and if your work stands on its own merit, then e-publishing is where it's at.
I think it's just, you know, the goal is get your stuff out as soon as possible and build your audience and connect with people that dig your stuff, and then if traditional publishing comes to you, then take advantage of it.
That's the route. E-publishing got me a traditional publishing representation, you know, and that's, yeah. I got discovered for that from the e-stuff. You know, my goal is every platform. I want you to either get it on a Kindle. I want you to be able to get into the book, however you want to read it. I want to get it out there, but I'm not going to wait for permission for somebody to make it happen, which I think we all agree. Don't wait for permission. Just go do it and keep trying to make it better. Create for an audience. Don't just write because you think it's the gold rush, right? Because you want to write, because you're passionate about it, and you'll find people who feel the same way, hopefully, or you're really weird.
So seconds before we started this episode of Weird Things, somebody had sent over to me via Twitter a Kickstarter project that I hadn't seen before that ties in very directly to the work that we're doing, or the discussions we've had here on this show. You guys, in the spirit of Andrew Maine, I want to kick it over to you guys.
Oh, the spirit of Andrew Maine.
let us summon forth. Spirits, are you there? Spirits, what Kickstarter project do you think directly ties in to Weird Things? And I'll tell you this much. The goal is $8,000, and they're already at $17,997.
$8,000. I'm trying to think about how much Jet A fuel I was going to need. And no.
I'm gonna say unicorn horn.
Yeah, a unicorn. Somebody wants to start a unicorn horn collection, and all he needs is $8,000 to make his dream.
Or reality. He wants to breed a unicorn and a Pegasus and make them fight, and then we will finally have an answer to our.
You realize there will be a time when that will be like, oh, amusing, but totally possible.
Yeah, because we'll be a little like, oh my God, you're right. Humans will live to see a time when we can, for grinsies, genetically engineer and create unicorns.
Yeah, people are like, it's not a real unicorn. Like, it prances, it has a horn, virgins like it.
Yes. Holy cow.
Dude, where are you going today? Going to the park with my unicorn?
That is amazing.
My little baby unicorn. I mean, other than the other one I already have.
Man, imagine unicorns in the Olympics. Imagine Ann Romney's unicorn, how people would freak out about that. That would be awesome.
Man.
And the Lance Armstrong unicorn. Turned out, by the way, I was very upset to find out that Lance Armstrong did not go to the moon this week. That was really, really upsetting.
Did you read all those tweets about that where people were like sincerely? Like, I only saw it after the fact. I didn't think I wasn't smart enough to search Lance Armstrong at the height of the controversy. Where people were saying, essentially, see, I told you he never went to the moon. Steroids.
Shockingly enough, I'll tell you what. I think I'm going to wonder when it's going to stop becoming a news story, when something happens on Twitter and people find stupid people talking about it or misunderstanding it.
Here's the thing about that is that like, I've seen some of those, like, oh, look at these stupid people, a million. And, like, I would say a good third of them are joking. And then a lot of them are people who are like, oh, my God, I'm so stupid. Look what I realized or just thought, which I love that because, you know, if I had a Twitter feed that was only the stupid things I did all day long, you would be pretty bored by now because you'd realize, man, Andrew's pretty stupid. But just I love people willing to admit that. I hide my mistakes deep, real deep.
All right, so back to the mystery Kickstarter project where for only $8,000, you can make a important contribution. However, they're already up to almost $18,000. What's your guess?
So they're going to make it, you think? They're going to be close.
Well, yes, since they're already surpassed by $10,000.
Let's not get too cocky, Brian.
They have 530 backers, 16 days to go.
It's the Electoral College?
No. How about this? Let me read through some of the awards. If you pledge $1 or more, you're a friend of this product or service. You get newsletter emails about the project, links to behind-the-scenes images, technical reports. $3 or more, you get a greeting card. They'll send you a custom card. It'll include a survey of... they'll send you a survey of image choices. Some will be focused on the item, some on the other item, and some on the life-saving aspects of the first item. $5 or more, you get the same
snakes.
$5
snake
or more.
Ambulance. So if you're in an earthquake, the snakes can slither on down and rescue you.
Amazing.
Don't worry.
Like instead of like dogs that like have like they have, you know, avalanches, the big fluffy dogs with the rum, like rescue snakes. Rescue snakes.
It's me, the rescue snake.
Oh, we got a bunch of Chilean miners stuck in a mine. We've got to get them some fajitas. What do? Wrap them around the rescue snake and let
I'll make sure this isn't their last meal.
For $5 or more, you could...
You're trapped in a snake pit.
For $5 or more, you get the same custom card, plus attached to each card is a snippet of the potentially record-breaking thing that they use to do the other thing.
So if my little child gets caught inside of one of those giant, like, grab machines trying to get the toy. I use my snippet to call that number for the record-breaking number of emergency snakes to slither
rescue,
in there and rescue,
rescue snakes.
For $8 or more, you become a card-carrying supporter. $9 or more, you get a friendship bracelet. $12 or more, you get an art print.
I'm worried where this friendship thing is going, you know, and to get to second base.
$15 or more, you get a group talk with the people who are doing the thing. $20, you get a necklace. Holy crap, they got a lot of stuff. $15.
This is a lot of just charms here.
Yeah, let me jump forward. Here, I'm going to scroll on down. This is me scrolling 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 rolls. Now we're up to $500 or more. You get a keynote speaker. This person will come and talk about doing
Hello,
the thing.
Hello, it's me, the rescue snake. Welcome, students of Ohio University.
At $2,500 or more, you get a dinner party. You can invite 6 other people, and the 8 of us will talk about the future. Humanity's move to blank.
Do you have any live mice for me, the rescue snake, at dinner?
All right, there's only one of one left. If you pledge $10,000 or more, there can get only one. Someone is going to get to use this service first. Off the top of the blank, it might as well be you. Imagine it. You are at this place and you get
Blow
to use
your
the thing.
Snake whistle and I'll rescue you wherever you might be. Me, the rescue snake.
Like that temple in Conan where you had the giant snake that he had to defeat to get the gem. The okay. rescue snake comes in, and you're in, that's the place, that Conan serpent temple, and then yep. the first person to get the service gets the rescue snake.
All right, here's the last. There's 0 backers, so this is still wide open. Pledge $10,000 or more, and you get 3 wishes. We're going to have a long conversation in person, probably several. When you feel you've heard enough, you may ask me for 3 wishes. And like a genie, if it is within my power to grant, I will do it. Is this a gamble? Yes, I'm gambling a lot. Is this a gamble for you? Not hardly. I know I've got lots and lots of stuff worth this price, but it's a value for value exchange. I'm not giving you control of the project or all of our intellectual property or something else that's way out of proportion. It's a trade. I'll give you something worthy of the price you are paying. So 3 wishes. Any guesses? Last chance? You guys are stuck on Rescue Snake?
They need $8,000 to do this.
Yeah. Apparently that's the first phase of whatever it is they're doing.
Did one of their backers get deported to Brazil?
No.
You guys can get my boyfriend to America. I need $8,000 to drive him across the border. It's
Brian,
gonna be hot.
I have no idea. I can think of a million stupid things.
Okay. Well, here it is. The Kickstarter. If you go to Kickstarter, it is the only entry that shows up if you type in the phrase space elevator. So space elevator science, climb to the sky, a tethered tower, and basically these guys are working on the ribbon, that technology, and the rover that goes up and down the ribbon to build a ribbon into space. Because that's the thing. It's like, number one, there's a few technological hurdles that you have to get over with a space elevator, one of which is making carbon nanotubes long enough, because right now all the ones that we've made are measured in microns long. They're so tiny, but you need to make very, very long ones to have them be strong enough.
Wait, back up. That photo looks a little... Oh, never mind.
Hey, go ahead. I'm sorry, you were saying. But the other technological challenge is you have to have rovers, these spiders that climb up and down the ribbon to build it, because you'll lower something down. You got to land it on Earth, and then you got to make everything link up, but then you got to build it up strong enough that you can actually send a physical space elevator up and down this thing. And obviously,
yeah, I remember like NASA had there was a competition to try to building like one of the little rover thing. I guess for me, the $8,000, I was never going to make the connection to space elevator. I don't know why.
That's. I mean,
because building a space elevator would be the most expensive thing anyone has ever done in the history of humanity.
Hey, Justin, hold on a second. Let's think about this. So we're worried that humanity is going to maybe, like, if a meteor, there was some catastrophic, real global catastrophe could wipe us off. So we want to get to space so we don't, like, die. The species doesn't die, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
What is a giant space elevator but a very, very, very large snake into space?
Okay. All right.
When?
All right. You know what? I will give it to you because for $8,000, that is what I would think.
It's me, the rescue space snake.
The space elevator, Justin.
Don't leave him hanging. You high-five that man. All right.
Here's a photo of the space elevator rising over the ocean.
Yeah, it's totally a rescue snake.
You actually should read all of this stuff. It talks about these guys have prior work in this area. It says between 2004 and 2007, they got good at building robots that climb into the sky. And they've got established technology, and
we're experienced with Capsella. We're moving on to Mindstorms.
That's right. Now and robotics.
All right, but I mean, I guess why 8,000? Because it seems like you could do any. I mean, if it's not going to be, you know, a big, substantial, like massive infusion of cash, the likes of which would be, you know, dwarfing.
Well, here's what it says. It says basically this is a project that is space elevator research. It's smart robots climbing up 2 kilometers straight up. The ribbon is held aloft by helium balloons. So this is not insubstantial. This is not pie in the sky. This is going to be usable.
Okay, so that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're doing this experiment, and the idea is we'll learn stuff from this experiment that could be applied to a space elevator. That's pretty sweet. I went from kind of in 2 seconds being very critical of that to I understand that. Like, it's an interesting way to fund that experiment.
What? You'll be the spoil sport? This is so surprising. Go ahead.
Because, like, my attitude on this is like, hey, listen, I think space elevator is a neat idea, but imagine it's like, I don't know, it's the year 100 AD. We've got a couple Roman philosophers in front of us. Or, you know, let's get like 300 BC, you can get 200 BC, whatever. Or Greek times, whatever. I'm going to get my history wrong. One dude's like, listen, I've got a really awesome idea. You're like, all right, what is it? It's called a Concorde. Like the grape. I love the grape. That grape is no. It is a jet that will go faster than the speed of sound. We'll be able to go from friggin' Rome to America, which I won't even get into that. It'll blow your mind. Like just within hours. All right. Here are the specs. Here's this. Here's this. Here's the idea. We think it's possible. The other guy's like, hey, I've got an idea for a better rudder and an improved trimaran, which will allow us to build an amazing empire, and we'll be able to have this, like, oh, in, you know, 8 months. What are we going to spend the entire resources of our empire upon?
Okay, and I agree with you on that.
And by the way, reusable spacecraft, cheaper than space elevator.
Okay, and I agree. Everything you've said, I totally agree with. But let's move right along.
Let's thank our sponsor.
These guys just got space elevator on the brain. They're not going to a university to deplete their funds. They're not going to the government to have them fund it. They're just saying, hey, lunatics who also want a space elevator research, you want to pay for this thing? Because we'd like to do it, because we really have a boner for the space elevator.
I think I'm absolutely supportive of crazy ideas. I am absolutely, absolutely, totally, totally for that. And I think, you know, free world, do what you want to do. I think the thing is I would say that there's a lot of interest in space elevators because it's this sexy idea where people have given up on, a lot of people moving away from rockets. It's like, rockets. We know what they can do.
What based on this experience of weird, just take weird things alone. I'm the only asshole who seems to like the space elevator on this podcast. Where do you get off saying it's the sexy new idea? What is sexy about a boring ass technology that's 100 years off from being completed that nobody wants to support? Where do you call that sexier than SpaceX, who's actually launching
stuff?
When I
go to my nerd conventions, my singularity, you know, groups and all this, it's space elevator. And I used to be the space elevator guy because I'm like, oh, rockets, that's boring.
He had a shirt and a hat that blinked and said, look at me, I'm the space elevator. Ask me about my space elevator.
You know, in the realm of nerd, of like the really, you know, the nerd cutting edge, it's let's build space elevator. Whereas with the rocket stuff, Elon Musk was like, hey, let's take a look at this. What if we made a three-stage reusable rocket? And it's like, huh. I'm like, that would be cool. And, oh, yeah, it'd be cheaper to orbit than a space elevator. And be like, that's crazy talk. I think try everything. I think that we've got a limited number of brilliant brains on the planet. And I think sometimes if you solve, like, you know, things that we talk about, like the obvious ideas, and sometimes people don't want to go for them. Hypertext is sort of an obvious idea, but it took us until the 1990s and guy like Tim Berners-Lee to say, hey, how do we make this work for everybody? And then boom, we get this explosion there. I am all for pursuing space elevators. I'm all for pursuing that. I just want to say that, like, my mind was blown when I watched Elon Musk explain why not have a three-stage reusable rocket. And I'm like, okay. You know, I was like, wow, how come nobody would talk about this before?
I mean, the only thing is, like, I do think that this particular thing, though, is, and you know, I think that there's a danger into getting into the unintended benefits or the fringe benefits of doing research like this. You know, like when people get, you know, all crazy about, like, you know, like, oh, we should have NASA so we can have Tang. Like, I think that can be a little silly. But, like, I think for something like this, there's a great benefit to having robots that can climb super high. Like, that's a cool thing to research, even if it's not for a space elevator.
Yeah, well, especially if they can spider-like, you know, actually build as they climb.
Wait. So are you saying we could get spider powers, like spider webs?
Yes, we're saying that if you back this project, you will definitely have spider powers the next morning.
But I mean, I might have like Peter Parker shoot mechanical web shooters, grab stuff, swing back and forth, call my local IATSE union crane teamsters, and be able to like fly through New York City.
Sure? Question mark. I can't speak on behalf of them, but I'm pretty sure that's the gist of what this Kickstarter is all about.
You may have told me. In all seriousness, guys, check this Kickstarter out. I do think things like this are awesome. I think that they really are worthy of our support. Not that, you know, supporting some other Kickstarter logo macrame play project isn't important, but this is awesome stuff.
But this is definitely a million times more important.
Yes. We may all die if you don't support it.
The rescue snake.
Snake.
Yes, Brian, it's me. Did you call? It's the rescue snake.
Are you cold? Do you need me to cuddle with you, snuggle around?
Take you to the sky, shall I?
There's just something awful about being rescued by something that creepy. There's something just like, oh, I'm falling to my doom.
Don't worry, it's me, the rescue snake.
And you're just like, ugh. I mean, I know I'm alive, but ugh.
Are you hungry? I can regurgitate some food.
Here, eat some eggs. They're my children.
Remember, man, like the one they found in Everglades had 87 eggs. You know, like that's the thing. You got your third kid coming. You know, the first one, oh, it's so precious. The second one's like, all right, they're indestructible. Third one's like, okay, 87th.
87th, they're like, let's just name them Brian 43. How about that?
Of course, a reminder, thank you again to Gord McLeod of Fiction Improbable for sponsoring the whole GD podcast.
I'm going to go hop over to Fiction Improbable right now. I'm going to take a look because I'm going to do my own little pitch here for why you should go to Fiction Improbable.
And we should point out that Gord has been watching all of our stuff for a very long time.
Yeah, Gord has been a solid supporter of this. Gord McLeod. By the way, that's like a really cool name, by the way. That's like totally a Highlander name.
Yeah.
And like, if you got your head chopped off.
My name is Gord McLeod of the Clan Screw You. I'll kill you with my space lasers.
So.
Our sigil is the rescue snake.
So he's talking. There's a lot of stuff here about writing. You know, you get to find out about some of his process here. Draft stories, fiction fragments. And so, you know, again, this is a very new, it's an exciting, writing has always been this very solitary. You go and you walk away or in your little cabin there and you're very insular. Stephen King talks about first draft with the door closed, second draft with the door open. And I believe that too, by the way.
No, see, but this is what I love about it is the exact reversal where it's like Gord is like, you know, this is the sausage being made as me as an author. I mean, he was kind enough to send over to me by email one of his short stories that I was really taken with. And I love the fact that you can choose in e-publishing, your own level of involvement as far as how open do you want to make this process.
I think whatever
fans.
Keeps you writing.
Yeah.
You know, whatever keeps the ideas coming. I think we want more ideas and not less ideas. So, you know, just keep rocking and rolling.
Right now you can go get a free EPUB version of his book Determination. If you want to check it out. It is, you know, there's different periods in history. We talk about the golden age of writing or the golden age of science fiction, the silver age. We are in a particular period in writing right now that we're going to look back 20, 30 years from now, and we're going to say there was this thing that happened when
the golden age. Yeah.
Things
when nobody
changed.
Knew.
They'll be like, oh, back before Andrew had the cult.
Right. He used to be a science fiction author. He used to talk about how he should get around to starting a cult. And we have these episodes of weird things that we
don't know how to really make money in ebook publishing.
Your exactly. Honor. And then he'd have a really patience trying movie made by Paul Thomas Anderson's son.
So, next topic. All right. So sometimes you read a headline and you're like, oh my God. This is the most exciting thing ever. Well, I've got two things like this. One, I will say this was a shorter subject. This is not cool. Side note. So in Griffith Park, and I think it's Griffith Park in L.A., they found out there actually is like a mountain lion there, and it's just sort of this small area.
I'm sorry. Hold on. There must be something really weird over the Skype connection because it sounded a little bit, and maybe it's just on my side. It sounded like you said there was a mountain lion.
Yes.
In LA?
There is a mountain lion in the world.
Yeah, but in a park,
even more so. So Griffith Park, let me get my facts straight again. So Griffith Park it's a nice big area in Los Angeles, and you've got it's actually the carousel where Walt Disney used to take his daughters where they would go watch, and he decided, you know what, it'd be great to build a thing called Disneyland. Good thing the mountain lion didn't go eat the girls, because then history would have been totally different.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, little
allegedly.
Fact.
That actually is written in the famous Disney biography, Walt Disney, A Magical Journey and Mountain Lions, which I am penning and involves mountain lions in his history.
Right. So for a while, people were like, hey, you know, we think there might be a mountain lion in Griffith Park. I'm like, all right, you crazy L.A. Angelinos, whatever. Mountain lion, Griffith Park in Los Angeles. Sure. What other tall tales are you going to spin? And then they actually found like footprints and other evidence, and they're like, holy crap. I think they caught like a wildlife camera caught and like, wow, there's a mountain lion living in Griffith Park.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. They've like there was like a puma there. And then now they found basically they've got a small plot of there's like a smaller they know that in the Santa Monica Mountains they live there, but this is an area that like you gotta go through. Like, have you seen LA traffic? What makes me, you have to like get through LA traffic and cross freeways and stuff to get to this area.
So is there like any sense that he's just going to like jump out of the wilderness and like eat Kobe Bryant?
I don't know if he goes to the Griffith Park or not.
Yeah. I mean, maybe though, right?
So I'm going to give you the exact, what's fascinating is it's one of those places where a lot of people are like, it's such a small territory. Why would it live there? But anyhow, so now they find out it's there. And you go, okay, Andrew, where's your point? Where are you getting with this? Because maybe not all of you like to go ride the little tiny trains at Griffith Park like some people and then go to IKEA and get hot dogs and ice cream on Sundays. I'm just saying hypothetically, and maybe it doesn't concern you the same way that other people who hear about these things think. Just take yourself outside of yourself for a moment and think about the impact of that. Right?
Yeah, sure. Exactly.
Okay. So anyhow, meanwhile, in Britain, they decided to call off the search for a lion there.
And now, hold on. This sounds like you're setting something else up.
Well, apparently in the English county of Essex, which has, you know, a pretty cool name, and it has 4,000 residents, there have been sightings of a lion. People said there's a lion there. And they're like, England has this thing about big cats. There's like always like these big cat sightings. There's
big cat myths, to the point of crypto creatures. Like they have their own like mysterious big cat creatures.
So apparently the police did a search and they decided to call off the search for the lion because, like, come on, really? Please? What part of Downton Abbey did you hear about lions? So that's been called off. But all I have to tell the people of Essex is Griffith Park, mountain lion.
We know your legend's real.
We know
yeah, exactly.
your legend's real.
Apparently, in 2011, there was the Hampshire tiger, whose appearance near a sports field led to a police alert. Turned out to be a stuffed toy.
I mean, I think the problem is just how British people talk. They always just sound so excited and crazy.
About everything.
Yeah. Oh, I just sit there down there. Oh, they don't say the tiger.
Oh. Even stuff that, like, isn't important. It was like oh, I'm sure there's chips everywhere.
And there's this one very patient police officer wearing the bobby hat, like, excuse me, sir, can you please say that again?
Well, I went down there to my ship, and I said, hey, tiger now, chips in later, here we go.
And a bunch of beautiful women were following it, and an old man was chasing them, and then they chased the old man.
See, now, and then they went into one door, and then... Sure enough, they come out another door down the hallway, and now he's wearing a lampshade on his head and no pants.
It sounds very important. We have criminology on it right now, looking to crack the code on what the hell you're talking about.
I think we totally offended an entire island of people.
It's not like they used to be a giant force, you know, empire.
I know. First they find out what happens in Vegas definitely does not stay in Vegas. Now they have to deal with this. So my apologies there. Britannia, we're sorry for making I'm defending people in the county of Essex. Like, listen, LA, mountain lion, lion.
Essex, what? Yeah.
Why is this though? We have African goblins. We get like goblin in Africa, and it's British people in lions.
Are they really that crazy for lions?
Big cats. Yeah. I mean, they love cats. Maybe that's like some fantasy is like, I mean, they're a bunch of cat lovers. I mean, like Britain is like, they are like.
Oh, hold on. You don't need to be all, that sounds awful
there's
dirty.
There's no judgment there, Brian. Don't project.
Yeah, a bunch of cat lovers, all them Britos.
I like.
Why don't you go make love to your cats then?
Why would you use the British accent to make fun of the British people?
Because I'm mocking their accent.
That was a Welsh accent.
That's your mocking fake accent. Yeah, that's not you trying to be British.
Hello, Governor. Why don't you make love to a cat? Why don't you rub its back? See its arch.
We
see
its really eyes like narrow in light. How to do accents. That would be really awesome.
It sounds like a lot like your British person.
That girl doing like
British
three different accents. I'd be like, all right, Welsh. Hello, Governor. All right, Yorkshire. Hello, Governor.
Yeah.
All right. Liverpool. Hello, Governor.
I feel like the three of us with British accent are like the Bluth family doing
doing the chicken.
Yeah, doing chicken sounds.
Coo-coo-ca-cha!
I think Justin's more passable than us.
Shisha, but... shisha. Coo-coo-coo-coo-coo.
Any more sponsor?
No, again. George, or Gord, Gord McLeod, man. Fiction Improbable, rock and roll.
Gordon George McLeod, who spotted many a wild cat himself.
Hey, man.
Yes.
You want to talk? We ran long on the other stuff. You guys want to start talking picks now? Because I actually have a lot to talk about.
Well, Brian, do you have a pick?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
I actually, I just finished, I mean, is it okay? Can we go on to picks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think now we don't have a choice now, do we, Brian?
Yeah, I sort of did. I kind of bullied you. It's like, you know, once I push you off the edge, I'm like, well, is gravity going to take you? Are you going to fall down? You're like, well, I guess so now. Screw you, rescue snake!
I'm aerodynamic.
Sorry about that one, Brian Brusswood.
Yeah, man, I just finished a couple of books. I'm trying to remember what. I just did Daniel Suarez's latest, Kill Decision. Have you read any of his other stuff?
No, I hear everybody rave about it.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly is. If you pay attention to the internet, he is certainly the author du jour that everyone likes to tell everyone about.
His, like, that be the new one who endorsed the Diamond Club? Thing.
Yes, he's the one who was very impressed with the technique of releasing the Diamond Club. So that brings it full circle, which, by the way, was so awesome for me to listen to Kill Decision the whole time thinking that this guy thought the Diamond Club experiment was hilarious. This is amazing.
Just to fill people in, he was on, and there's a great Triangulation episode with Leo Laporte and Daniel Suarez where they have a great long conversation about all of his work. And I believe it was after the interview, he was informed about the Diamond Club book and really was tickled by it.
I like that. Here he is, this guy who is like, you know, we talk about like new age of like sci-fi writers, thriller writers who people are absolutely raving about and excited about, not since like Michael Crichton type times. I like the idea. Oh, by the way, these two chimpanzees over here.
Yes.
they got their ape farm to write out an erotic thriller that just climbed the charts.
And
so,
then with a plastic.
Hey, take that.
With a plastic frozen grin, he says, did they now?
Did they? Ah,
that's great.
It's great.
That's great. That's wonderful. Top 10 bestseller, they say. Higher than my book? It's really something, huh? Digital publishing. What do you know? It's always
something.
Meanwhile,
I heard that. I just started writing my own erotic fiction, which
the chapter on
Skittles is a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you misheard us, so you wrote neurotic fiction. Just you're obsessing over like.
Listen, my dating life, meet the girls I've been involved with, neurotic would pretty much define that.
Andrew's been living a life of neurotic nonfiction.
the nicknames in my contact list say enough when you see that. And these are their own nicknames. So
that's amazing. Well, okay, so let me tell you real quick.
Daniel Suarez, if
you're not familiar with Daniel Suarez's other stuff, he wrote Demon and Freedom Trademark. Demon is, of course, the first half of this biology. What do you call it? Trilogy with two parts.
Series?
No, but that's only two. No, we don't know. Trilogy with only two pieces.
Yes.
I'm going to call it a biology. I don't care.
Bottle it.
Bottle it is what I'll say. A duology is what it should be. But he wrote it, and it's about somebody who from the grave plants a bunch of programs that essentially enact his will after he's died, leading to this kind of giant maze of possibilities. Kill Decision deals with something, and much more than his other books, I felt like Kill Decision felt a lot like a Michael Crichton book because it took something that it taught me some real science and, of course, sensationalized what could have gone wrong or what could still go wrong, talking about, like, we've got all these drones that the United States is relying increasingly upon. But the problem is that these drones are all remote operated and that you can jam the transmission signal between the two. And there's always a human in the loop that has to interpret the situation and decide whether or not to fire a missile or to trigger. And not the least of which is the problem of the fact that a lot of these guys are out in Vegas or wherever, sitting in darkened rooms where there's a time delay. So there's only so many kinds of moves you can do to counter various attacks. And the question is, should you, as artificial intelligence grows, is the next logical phase of warfare that these machines should be able to handle themselves, interpret their own surroundings, decide what's a friend or an enemy? For example, if the program knows, we'll say with 99.9% accuracy, that this is the enemy and this is who's attacking it, should the machine just have the authority to fire off the missile on its own and make the kill decision? And it's a bit over the top where he goes with it, but it was a really, really fun ride. I consumed the entire audiobook in, I think, 3 days. Now, granted, I did a lot of travel. I there are things I don't want to say about where it goes because it's really interesting and I think actually has practical implications, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked it as much as Demon and Freedom, so I highly recommend Kill Decision.
That's very, very cool. I think drones right now are kind of like what the bio thriller was in the 90s. It is that exciting sort of thing. And
the 80%
done with my own drone storyline, you start thinking about, every day when you read about police departments using them, we see first we see overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan the use of drones and the pro and the con, and now you have police departments buying them, and you realize that, you know, our idea of robots in the future was, you know, these Terminators walking around, not these things flying around overhead that have so much more power to see and control and annihilate us. Meanwhile, Burning Man is going to be using drones for pizza delivery. So that is the good side.
Wait, is that for reals? Is that really happening?
Well, I mean, I heard they're going to try to use some sort of delivery service with drones there.
That's amazing. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. If you plan to read the book, fast forward through the next minute. But if you're not planning to read the book, maybe this will scoop you into it. One of the elements that they bring in there is the idea of the initial drone strikes that are dealt with are these imitations of Predator drones and U.S. military equipment. But somebody uses essentially... And this is a reasonably big spoiler. So again, if you plan to read the book, skip over this.
I plan to read the book.
All right. Well, then
don't spoil it.
I'm hooked. I want to get it now.
Yeah, okay. You did good, Brian. You did a good job. You got everybody hooked.
All right. Well, for anyone who skipped ahead, we'll just pretend I just gave a major plot point and be like, oh, and that's how Santa Claus.
And this happened to you too when you were 13. No, you didn't tell anybody about it.
Exactly, and that's when the Jimi Hendrix shows up and it fixes everything.
You got all the photographs, though, so you're not worried about those getting out.
No, I am, and so I'd appreciate if we moved on to someone else's pick.
All right. Well, Justin has his set.
Yeah. But, all right.
Yeah.
How about this one?
All right. I'm going to go.
Go.
I like to be the cool seeker. I like to be the guy that's on the bleeding edge trying to find out that new thing. I like to sort of snip this out before anybody else has got wind of it.
Sure.
And it's why I do broadcasting. It's why I consider myself a tastemaker. And
you just discovered The Shadow on old-time radio.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
Just about.
Really?
Okay. Yes, just about. We've talked about this before, and I explained my reservations, and then based upon peer pressure, and then one sentence that the creator said, I go, I can get into this now. I can forgive I forgive you for the thing that bothered me, because that was really important that they know that Andrew Main, sitting by himself on his couch,
of course,
while storm rages overhead, decides to Netflix this. I'm halfway through season 3 on Breaking Bad.
I'm so glad to have you in the fold.
Yeah.
Only that's two down, only one to go. This is great.
I will tell you what flipped the bit for me, okay? Because I watched it when it first came on. Like, I love Bryan Cranston. I discovered Malcolm in the Middle after it finished, and I'm like, there's a show, Malcolm in the Middle. It's like the great. You're like, yeah, no, we watched that when we were children. What is wrong with you? I'm like, but doing and anyhow, I'm a big Bryan Cranston fan. Vince Gilligan, who is the creator of Breaking Bad, wrote some of the best X-Files episodes. It was a really, you know, key member there. I tried the first episode of Breaking Bad, and my problem is, like, if you read the stuff I write, I very much try – every character is specific for that story. And so when I think about a character, I try to make everybody sympathetic, even the villain. And so my problem with this, I go, this guy is behaving – and if you step back, is behaving in an unsympathetic way, and it's very hard for me to like him and to want to watch what happens and wish him well. Vince Gilligan talked about the idea of the arc of the show, and it was, I wanted to take somebody who was initially sympathetic and create a villain.
Right.
And I thought, okay, if I didn't like it when they tried to make Hannibal Lecter sympathetic, because Hannibal Lecter is a great white shark. You know, he does what he does.
Well, that's the reverse. They start with a villain, and then they try to make him sympathetic.
Yeah.
And that's to be honest, I can't remember if I mentioned it on this podcast or another one, but I've always felt like the TV series on FX, The Shield, was kind of the thematic inverse of Breaking Bad, whereas The Shield, the very first episode, you see, spoiler alert, the main character assassinate someone who he finds out is a spy in his strike team. And so from episode one, you think, this is a bad guy, he needs to go down. And the entire rest of the series, you find him increasingly sympathetic, whereas Breaking Bad is the reverse. You totally understand where this guy's coming from at the beginning, and you pity him, but then that wears down over time.
Yeah, and you have to accept that in that first episode, you're watching a guy who's already 20 years into the emotional breakdown of making him into this point where he does horrible things.
Right.
And once I said, okay, I get that now. I'm going to watch this and to find what fragments of humanity are still there and where they go, but not pretend that, you know.
So I think, and talking about the your experiences of the pilot, even like when it first came out, your problem was that it seemed to your initial impression that this was a good guy who did good things and then kind of did this bad thing that we were supposed to excuse because he was a good guy, not somebody who was already at the breaking point of kind of making these moral compromises to where he actually does something that's kind of terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that, like, I looked at this and I was not sympathetic to the rationale because I looked at the consequences of that. But then once I understood, the writers were like, well, there is a direction we're going. And this direction is not that, you know, you end it where you're like, and that's why, you know, you can be a good meth cooker.
Yeah. <You know? laughs>
Because again, TV often, you see, knowing how TV gets pitched, and sometimes people have really good ideas. They walk in the room and the network says yes. And then they said, by the way, it's got to be this and this and this. And you realize that it's no way is it going, can they get create the thing they want to? And you get some shows that kind of have cool premises, but then they just go awry because you realize that where they wanted to go and where the network wanted to go are totally different places. And my heart goes out to them. But I was compulsively watching that show all the way through and eating ice cream, which is my own little
your vice problem. Yeah,
yeah, no, that's my own little vice. I'm trying to kick it.
Those are your own Go Pebbles. They're cookies and cream Go Pebbles.
So there you go.
So
Breaking Bad, you heard it here for. Oh, Downton Abbey season 2, by the way, is on Netflix instant streaming. I watched that too.
It's on Netflix too. I knew it was on Amazon.
I don't think it's on Netflix. Amazon.
So real quick, you're in season 3 of Breaking Bad. Do you have the fever bad enough that once you finish out what's on Netflix, you'll go ahead and buy the rest of the episodes and get caught up? What do you think you'll do?
It'll depend upon time.
All right.
Yeah. I'm one of these people where, given that I have no restraint.
I know. That's the way it is for me. Like, I can't handle, and especially, like, if I care about a story and I realize that I'm in danger of hearing spoilers daily because everyone else is into the same series as well, like, I will dive in. I'll be like, I'll spend $30 just to, in a race to beat the spoilers.
And this is a show that, like, you know, I'm going to spoil alert. One episode starts off with a narco terror music video.
Yeah,
narco music, which is like the whole genre of music video. I mean, you've seen
that was amazing.
Right?
That whole thing was amazing. Yes,
and you're just like, and I'm rewinding it, going,
you're like, what the hell? Well, and it's like, and you know, you're watching. Okay, now, like, at least you're on Netflix, so you know you're watching the right thing. Like, when I'm recording stuff on the DVR and that stuff shows up, I was like, did I record the wrong freaking channel? What is this?
Yeah. So, Justin, you've seen it, right?
No,
I'm not. No,
no, he's the
but
last
now
one.
I think I'm going to have to. There, Andrew's watched it now, and my platonic friend Ashley Paramore is watching it. So I think I'm going to have to. Eventually, I'm going to give it.
Yeah,
or not? You know, you don't have to be in our club.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can just exchange our little tats. Inside jokes.
BRBA, right there.
Friends of Heisenberg.
All right. So what about you, Justin? What are you doing?
Yeah. All right. I'm going to do a pre-plug. There's a show that's coming back on the tube between now and when we come back and do another episode.
Explain to our listeners what a tube is, Justin, because I don't think they've manufactured a tube in the United States.
It's a potato.
Okay.
So what's going on? There's a show called Doctor Who. Again, we're bringing you the hidden gems here on this episode. The most popular fiction book currently, Breaking Bad and Doctor Who. That's what we're talking about. Doctor Who's coming back. I've not
been
shy.
Is this a 2008 podcast?
Exactly. You can go back on Weird Things and read about type in Doctor Who into the search thing and you can read about a lot of the problems that I've had with probably the most recent season specifically. I hope that this will be a return to form for Stephen Moffat and the Doctor Who people. I don't know if it is, to be honest with you, and I don't have a lot of high hopes, but I do enjoy the show.
I'm betting on the Kickstarter space elevator myself.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say go ahead and check it out. It's on BBC America. It debuts in England and America on the same day, September 1st. And
they don't get eaten by cats.
Keep your eyes out for I'm going to be doing a new podcast with Ashley, my friend Ashley Paramore, who we did the Online Ethicist podcast a little bit ago. We're going to do a short run, limited series where we just basically argue with each other about each episode of Doctor Who as it comes out. So if you like Doctor Who discussion, then feel free to download.
My favorite part of that entire introduction was the quote, limited engagement on there. That's good.
Well, because there's only going to be so many episodes.
I know. But also, there's only so much arguing people can handle. So it's good that, like, from the beginning, it's limited.
Well, yeah. I mean, if people don't like it, you know, then I'm not taping earphones to their face. You know, if they like it, they can listen to it. If they don't, they can not. It's fine. It's totally fine.
It's fine. It's great. It's great.
Go ahead over to Justin, our young Twitter, and I'll talk about when that's coming out.
Hey, I'm going to do an addendum pick real quick.
Sure.
I was at Star Wars Celebration because I am that big of a geek. That's the big official Star Wars convention that was in Orlando.
Very jealous I couldn't go this year.
And I realized I'm not a true fan. I'm walking along and I hear this sound. And I see like pasty geeks walking around with a lot of bandages. I'm like, is there like an escalator accident or something? Did it break and people just trip over themselves? And I'm like, oh. I mean, that was like they had a whole row of just people getting Star Wars tattoos, like a whole pavilion of just tattoo. Of just
oh, my God. Real tattoos
of Star Wars.
Yeah, that's okay. Amazing.
I had to get back to Florida to go watch or get back to Florida to obsessively watch Breaking Bad. But I saw Kevin Smith do his live talk.
How was it?
Let me put it this way. You sit there, you buy your ticket. This was a special paid event. I forgot, like, tickets ranged in prices or whatever. And they could pay, like, 20 or 20 bucks or 30 bucks or whatever for this. And it's full out, sold out. And this is the format for the show. Brian, you and I are idiots. I'm just going to tell you this right now.
Done.
We've known this, but I'm going to remind you, we are idiots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the way it works. So Star Wars Celebration, extremely well-produced conference convention, you know, my friends who went to a lot of the other panels. I have a problem about conventions is I hate waiting to see if I'm going to get into a room to see a panel or not, even though I paid for a damn ticket. I'm just be sure. Honest with you. That is my peeve. It's like, are you going to go to this? It's like, I don't know. I went to Comic-Con and I couldn't get into that. And last thing in the world I want to do is listen to people waiting for 4 hours, tell me how great it was.
Right.
And then the thing I did wait for to watch the preview for the show, I knew it would suck. But anyhow, I digress. Kevin Smith comes out, tells a very heartwarming, engaging story about him and Star Wars as a kid, you know, 20-minute sort of story, involved AT-ATs and other stuff. Very, very good little story. And then the rest of his talk, his show, his shtick is a Q&A. Now, Brian and I, you know, we're in businesses where, you know, the people that we you know, our colleagues, the people we aspire to do, you know, big, huge productions, even Penn and Teller, big, huge shows. They're inventing new bits. They're doing new stuff. They're constantly coming up with, you know, new ways to fool you, to trick you, to deceive you, high-tech apparatus, and just always, it's always a battle to do this. Kevin Smith's like, all right, who has questions? And then he tells extremely engaging stories. He is a fantastic rock on tour. I mean, it was an hour and a half. It was wonderful. Enjoyed every single minute of it.
I am so happy. I totally thought you were setting us up to. I thought you were setting us up so that you were going to bag on the fact that all Kevin Smith did was tell stories we'd heard before. But it's like instead, like that's exactly what I would have hoped it would have been because I'm a tremendous fan of all this.
I went to a comedy club, not one magic trick. They just told jokes.
Yes. Yes. What?
Which, by the way, an hour and a half for a Kevin Smith show is like him is like Beethoven doing a punk rock song. Like it is that's about as short as they come.
He was very funny because he walks out there and he's like, all right, this is Star Wars. But he says, listen, if you're going to come up there and ask me, you know, what I thought of The Dark Knight, I'm not going to be like, and that is your Star Wars question. He was very cool. He talked about other stuff, but he did relate a lot of Star Wars stuff. And he's justifiably got a lot to talk about in that area. But it was great. And it's a guy, he's funny. You know, watching a sign language interpreter try to
keep up.
Just, Yeah, and I learned sign language for some very foul things that I did not know there was signage for, and that was funny in of itself. And there's a phrase that he uses that Tenacious D also uses. I think Tenacious D had it first about the ear something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, sure.
And listen, you know, watching a cute interpreter watch her do that, you're like, oh, that's funny. anyhow, enjoyed it. So if you get the chance to see Kevin Smith talk, absolutely recommend. I've always enjoyed listening to when I have the chance the Smodcast, his other stuff. While he was up there, he pimped out. He does a podcast called The Fat Man on Batman.
Batman. I listened to the latest episode just recently. Like, and I'm not crazy about Batman, but I wanted to hear I was listening to Smodcast. And the Smodcast for this week was, or the most recent one that I hadn't listened to, was this is the second half of my description of The Dark Knight Rises. So if you want the full story, you got to go listen to Fat Man on Batman.
Have you listened to his two-parter with Mark Hamill?
No, not yet, but I hear
it's
amazing.
He does a two-part with Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, who I had no idea, you know, because a lot of stars like, oh, yeah, I was a geek before I became this. I know Mark Hamill was like writing articles for like Harryhausen Fan Effects magazine and stuff before he became Luke Skywalker.
God damn, that's
legitimate
amazing.
Comic book collecting geek. When he would work on a TV show before Star Wars, he'd be geek out because, oh, you were in The Thing. You were in the Howard Hawks movie. You were in this. You were in that. Two-parter Mark Hamill, the most famous voice of the animated Joker. Great interview, and it's really just Mark Hamill talking all these stories.
That's
so there you
amazing.
Go.
Yeah, I listened to the first half. I haven't listened to the second half yet. But Andrew ain't kidding, man. Like, he was a dude that was like, if there was anybody prepared and born to be not only to play Luke Skywalker as an actor in a movie, because I think there's a lot of people who could have played Luke Skywalker, taking nothing away from Mark Hamill's acting ability. But I mean, you could have had different takes on it. It would have been a different thing. But nobody, I think, in the world was better prepared to be the Luke Skywalker as Star Wars, as a phenomenon, continued to mushroom and explode. Because I think he very much feels among that community.
If George Lucas said, I'm going to have a lottery, and the winner is the most awesome proto-geek gets to destroy the Death Star and get the Force, I would say that Mark Hamill was a worthy winner of that lottery.
Amazing. All right, so real quick, we mentioned Star Wars Celebration, but if we're going to talk about fan con things that are coming up, Justin...
New York Comic Con, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, you're that far off, and by that far, I mean the length of the Eastern Seaboard. Justin, what's going on, man?
Labor Day weekend is upon us, folks. If you are in or around the Atlanta area, please come on down to Dragon Con. That is where you will find just a host of me and Brian stuff. Brian's on like five panels. I'm on like four panels. We're doing stuff that, you know, live versions of podcasts, including if you listen to me and Tom Merritt's FSL Tonight, which is very compatible amongst the Weird Things audience. We're doing the live finale of this season at Dragon Con. We have a live gigantic episode of NSFW, which with a lot of special guests that we have lined up. That'll be very, very cool. So go check that out. Just go on to either schwood.com, justinrobertyoung.com. You can find the panel information for me and Brian. And also, if you're listening to this, then you are cordially invited to our top
secret.
Oh,
this is the big deal. This is the big deal. And we sincerely mean this. This is only for listeners of this podcast, people who directly know. And you've got to be a watch. Here's how you get into our super secret Diamond Club party. You can't just say you know somebody who knows somebody. You can't just say you've heard the podcast. You will be given a quiz. You got to know who Spiro and the Fudge are. You got to know who Old John Smokey is. You got to understand if they say rape ape and your eyes just go glassy, it's not going to be a good sign.
Were a victim of rape ape?
Okay, well, then they're in automatically.
They're in. That's fine. But that was part of the legal settlement. That's not anything to do with this.
You're right.
Yeah, you will have rape to do ape. A rescue rape snake ape. Impression.
Yes. The point is if you're a genuine fan, we've set up a very super secret party at Dragon Con in Atlanta that we're extraordinarily proud of. I actually just saw the documents coming in. What, Justin, was I right? 120? Magic golden tickets we have for free booze. Is that right?
Well, I think that they are tickets. Like each gets a thing.
All right.
Well, we'll talk about that. Hey, listen, 9 to midnight. That's when it's happening in Atlanta. We'll have details the day of, but check it out. Big super secret party.
What day?
Saturday night.
All right, here's the deal.
S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y night.
Call me skeptical, but like I know that like Brian, I know you're a working entertainer. Justin, I know that you put your money into these weird Ponzi schemes. How good of a party could you throw? Because where would the money be coming for a party like this? No offense.
Well,
no offense, guys.
I understand. You're saying, like, I only want to go to a party that's well-funded and well-financed.
I'm just – last party I was at was in Las Vegas. It was Chris Angel's hangout, okay? I'm not going to name the names of people who were there. I'm just telling you, okay?
I'll tell you what.
And I know what money came to pay for that. All right, tell me. Sorry.
Okay, of all the erotic fiction books that Chris Angel wrote, what's the best-selling one? Zero? Maybe one? We got a bankroll. This party is going to be amazing thanks to not only the fine people who wrote the Diamond Club, but the fine people who bought the Diamond Club. Thank you, all of you, because you're supporting
you're
our...
You're taking funds that people paid for this erotic fiction, and you're blowing it on a party.
Well, that was kind of the stated goal.
That
was the thing that we said from the very beginning was... How are we going to spend the money? We're going to spend it on a party. So we're throwing it, you know, we thought it was going to be like, it would be
$500.
For real. We thought it was going to be like $500 and then we'd pay for, and basically we just go to a bar and like throw $500 at a bartender and say, hey, listen, anybody with this stamp gets free booze until the $500 is gone. That was like the initial idea. This turned out to be a much bigger success than we were planning on. And so therefore we have a big fat party at a real nice place that's going to be really awesome with special guests, including Ali Spagnola, who is going to do at least a power half hour, if not the full live power hour at the party. So it's going to be pretty sweet. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, our goal, and I'm just going to flat out tell you right now, I'm not going to wait for it to be a surprise for next year. My goal is to go and lay the groundwork for why Dragon Con needs to have Andrew Main as a guest of honor next year. And I hope all of the listeners to the show do their part to tell, because I mean, and this is in all sincerity, Andrew, it's ridiculous that you're not going to be there considering that you've had how many books have you written in the last year?
Five or six.
Okay. Published.
No, because I know I can think of three offhand that are not published.
Okay. All
awesome.
Right. The point is you publish half a dozen books in the last year, and I know you don't want to talk about it, but there's talk about there's agents and movie options and all kinds of amazing crap happening. I guarantee my stated goal, and I hope everyone else participates, is to make Andrew Main a honored guest next year at Dragon Con.
The Make Mine Main campaign.
In all honesty, guys, if I can make it this year, I will go. I will try to drive up.
Please do that, dude. It'll be amazing.
I really do want to go. I basically, when you guys are picking up a check, I want to be there. Particularly Justin. I mean, Brian, I've stayed at your house. When Justin's involved in picking up a check, that's about the weirdest thing I can imagine. So I have machinations and things like that going on right now. So we're going to try. But also, I have my brother and my sister-in-law and my adorable nieces live right north of there.
Yeah.
And I'm pointing to the moon because they actually live on the moon. But anyhow, yeah. So
awesome. Well, look, that would be amazing.
Hey, if Neil Armstrong, our hero, can make it to the moon, I'm going to try again. I had a complication come up this week. A good one, but.
Andrew, I'm serious, man. I think you will be utterly shocked by how much love and attention you'll get there. It's a fantastic convention.
We're frightened by that, too.
I mean, there's a reason that, like moths to the flame, Justin and I are determined to head back year after year, and I think you'll get into it as well.
Well, I heard about the new gonorrhea, you know, super version that's hard to treat, so I'm a little...
Super gonorrhea! Man.
Cha-cha-cha.
Talk about a disease you thought was a country.
Right. That sounds like a wrap-up to an episode if I've ever heard one.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been weird.
Amazing.
Help! Help! I'm trapped inside the cushions of my couch!
Don't worry, good sir. I'll save you. It's me, the rescue snake.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can Have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.
This is my favorite show ever.